Hi, listeners, and welcome to the True Crime Weekly podcast, a podcast that is based in San Diego and hosted by me, Alina Trujillo, and my producer, Jose Fernandez. This is a podcast where I will be bringing you stories of murders, infamous cases, and unsolved mysteries. On December 27th, 1986, at about 9:45 p.m., Kara Knott called her family and said she was heading home from her boyfriend's house in Escondido. But that would be the last time that Kara's family would hear from Kara again. This is the story of Kara Knott. Kara was a San Diego State University student who, on the night of December 27th, 1986, was leaving her boyfriend's house in Escondido, California, and was traveling southbound on Interstate 15, heading back home to El Cajon, California. Kara was last seen leaving a Chevron gas station in her 1968 white Volkswagen Beetle, just 2 miles away from where Kara's car would be found later. The attendant remembers seeing a marked CHP patrol car making a U-turn on the road just after Kara had driven away. CHP officer Craig Pear was on duty that night when he flashed his lights indicating Kara to pull over off the freeway to an isolated off-ramp. Once Kara pulled over, the situation between Craig and Kara became physical. Craig ended up beating Kara with his flashlight and strangled her with rope from his patrol car. He then disposed of her body by throwing her off an abandoned bridge into a brush below.
But why?
Well, you see, it was later discovered that CHP officer Craig Pear also had been harassing several other female drivers in the same area by pulling them over on the same off-ramp, supposedly trying to pick them up as dates.
You kidding?
No. So in Kara's case, it was believed that the situation escalated when Kara threatened to report Greg about his inappropriate actions. Mm-hmm. When Craig attempted to grab her, she slashed and scratched at his face. And that's when Greg then bludgeoned her with his flashlight and strangled her to death with rope. He then threw her body over the edge of the abandoned bridge where she fell into the brush below.
That's horrible.
So this was like a thing that he did. He just happened to always pick up women, which it was later determined that all the women that he had pulled over kind of looked like Kara.
Really?
Mm-hmm. So it was like similar height, yeah, hair color, everything.
And all the other girls I was picking up, they all died too, or they were attacked?
No. He was just picking them up. Real Mr. Casanova, you know?
That's horrible. I mean, he's a cop, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, you're expecting to trust this person. And
right. That's just right.
Awful.
Yeah. So when Kara never made it home, her parents knew right away that something was wrong. Kara was known to be a very responsible 20-year-old, and she would just not come home after, you know, she had already called and say, hey, I'm on my way back home. It just wasn't like her. The next morning, Kara's family alerted the authorities, and Kara's father, Sam, went out looking for her right away. Sam drove between their house in El Cajon to her boyfriend's house in Escondido, searching for his daughter's white Volkswagen. Then in the early morning hours of December 28th, Sam spotted Kara's car off Interstate 15 in the old Highway 395 bridge near the Mercy Road exit. Sam immediately called authorities to tell them that he had found his daughter's car. There were no signs of Kara in the car, however, but her front window had been rolled down as if she had stopped and rolled down the window for someone that she may have trusted.
Yeah, like a cop?
Mm-hmm. So when police officers arrive at the scene, one police officer peered over the railing of the bridge and spotted Kara's body, dumped from the bridge to the ground about 75 feet below. That was fantastic, Jose. You want to know what I just did?
What'd you do?
I opened up the new wine that I received from Wine of the Month Club. So do you, Jose, want to treat yourself or someone special to great wines month after month?
I would love to.
Well, now you can with Wine of the Month Club. With Wine of the Month Club, you get 3 different bottles of rare international wine every month. You get to choose from all red, all white, or mixed. You can also choose to do a package every 2 months or 3 months if that's a better option for you. And every package ships with their monthly newsletter covering your selections and our listener favorites. Fun facts!
We are a proud affiliate, which means if you go to truecrimeweeklypodcast.com/support the show and click on the Wine of the Club Month link and sign up, we will earn a commission.
You can support the show and get wine delivered to your door by using promo code HOLIDAY15 to get $15 off any 4-month club, or you can use promo code HOLIDAY20 for $20 off any 6-month club. Which sounds like a win-win to me. You get to stay home during this COVID-19 pandemic, quarantine by yourself, and your wines.
And they ship free.
What? Hey, Jose. So you know that during this pandemic, it could even be scary to go to the grocery store sometimes?
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, you can save yourself that trip using Instacart. Instacart delivers groceries in as fast as 1 hour. Instacart highlights deals to help you save money. They find everything you usually buy. You can get smart suggestions for new items. They even pick the freshest produce, and they keep your eggs safe, too.
We are a proud affiliate of Instacart, so head over to truecrimeweeklypodcast.com/support the show and click their link.
Okay, so get this. 2 days after the murder, CHP officer Craig Pear was featured on a TV interview that happened to be like a ride-along for a segment related to self-protection for female drivers.
Are you kidding?
No. So after all this happened, it was reported that, you know, female drivers that were driving alone were scared of pulling over by police officers. Like, they didn't know, like, if they were going to get hurt, just like Kara. They didn't know what. So...
yeah.
They started having issues with females, like, not pulling over.
Really?
Which I have to say, this happened before I was even able to drive, you know? I was 1 when this happened. But I don't know why I vaguely, and I don't know about you because you're a guy, but when I started learning how to drive, I don't know why. I vaguely remember my dad always saying, like, if a cop pulls you over, just make sure it's a cop before you roll down your window or do anything.
Yeah, I remember that.
And maybe it was all because of this. Yeah, I remember that from, you know, this is way after all this happened. So you can just imagine when this first happened, when this first hit the news, female drivers were scared. Women were scared of stopping if they were alone in the car. Here's the interesting part. Craig's face had scratches during the interview. So Greg tried to explain the scratches by saying that they were caused when he fell against a fence in the CHP parking lot. But the fence was found to be too high to have caused the scratches on Greg's face.
Huh.
Yeah, so within about the hour of when the murder was thought to have occurred, witnesses at the Chevron gas station saw a disheveled Craig drive in at high speed. And one of them happened to be an off-duty San Diego police officer.
Really?
And he reported seeing the scratch marks an hour before Greg claimed that he had gotten them. So following the broadcast, several calls by other female drivers were received by authorities. A new picture of Greg Pear began to emerge. Prior to this, Greg had been seen as a loyal 13-year officer who rode an unusual amount of tickets, but nothing else. Like, nothing extreme. Nothing to, you know, to this extent. Like, everybody was just kind of like, yeah, he tends to write a lot of tickets in this particular area, but...
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it was never like he was accused of anything.
Or anything like this, yeah.
Right. So now Greg rapidly started to have a reputation of following female drivers and pulling them over in the same secluded location as Kara. Though most of the callers insisted that Greg was nice and non-threatening, but when they left, they felt an uneasy creepiness about him.
Hmm.
So all of the women were... of approximate age and physical characteristics to Kara. So just like how I was telling you earlier, same height, around the same age, they all had blonde hair, just like Kara.
Yeah.
So several other patrolmen and women became suspicious of Greg, as many of them knew Greg had a tendency to make tickets at that secluded off-ramp. It also was discovered that not only had a mother contacted authorities a month before Kara's murder to complain about Greg pulling her daughter over at that Mercy exit off the I-15 for no apparent reason.
In the same place where
same place Kara's a found. Month prior. And this mom called to complain to say, hey, you know, this police officer or this CHP officer pulled over my daughter for no reason. It was a secluded area.
So did anything happen? Was there an investigation?
No, that's the thing. Nothing happened. When the mom called to complain, nothing happened. It was just kind of, okay, thanks. We'll note it down, whatever. Like she was just brushed off.
Yeah, I wasn't treating anything serious. Right.
So within a week of Kara's investigation, investigators turned their focus to Greg. And I believe that Greg started to feel the pressure. So in attempt to like shift the heat away from him, Greg attempted to falsify his logbook, trying to show that he had issued tickets in a different location at the time of Kara's murder. But the ticketed motorist disputed his claims. So he was trying to falsify his log so it could seem like, hey, it wasn't me. I wasn't at the scene. I wasn't the one that pulled Kara over. Like, if you see here, I issued a ticket to this person over here at that same time. Which later, again, you know, the guy was like, no, that's not true.
Really?
Yeah. So physical evidence would eventually tie Greg to Kara Knott. Gold fibers found on the dress that Kara was wearing matched the gold braid on the shoulder patch of Greg's uniform. So you know how like CHP officers and then it's like what? I believe it's black with like gold lettering and stuff.
Yeah.
Boy, it happened to match that exact fiber on his uniform. Oh, man. So along with the gold fiber, a drop of blood was found on one of Kara's boots. And that type of blood happened to be AB negative, which happened to be Greg's blood type. Which, fun fact, I happened to learn this when I was, you know, doing my research for this story. But did you know that AB negative blood is the most rare type of blood in a person? And about only 1% of the population has it.
1%?
1%. That's so crazy. Fun fact. So, okay. Now, given that little, you know, fun fact, that already seems pretty incriminating, right? Yeah. Like, come on, like, they found this drop of AB negative blood, and he happens to be that? Like, that seems pretty incriminating.
Right.
Well, along with that, a rope was also found in the trunk of Greg's patrol car that had a pattern that matched Kara's neck. So, Kara's neck happened to have a pattern, like, from the rope, from whatever was used to strangle
her.
Yeah, and it happened to be a match to the rope that he had in his patrol car.
Really?
So
I mean, everything here is adding up to this guy.
Right. So on May of 1987, Greg was officially fired from the CHP. And on January 15th, 1987, Greg Pear was arrested and charged with the murder of Kara Knott. What you got there, Jose?
I just opened an ice cold beer from Beer of the Month Club.
Treat yourself or someone special to great beers month after month by joining the Craft Beer of the Month Club. Each monthly shipment contains a 12-pack with four different types of rare craft beer, hand-selected from small American craft breweries. We are a proud affiliate, which means if you go to truecrimeweeklypodcast.com/support the show, click on the Craft Beer of the Month Club link, and sign up, we will earn commission. Stay home and keep cool with an ice cold beer. Cheers, Jose. Okay, so there would be two trials in the case of the state of California versus Craig Pear. The first would end in a hung jury in February of 1988 with a deadlock of 7-5 for conviction. So Greg didn't testify during his first trial. Okay. So because the verdict was, you know, a deadlock, the family wanted a new prosecutor and they called upon a young rising star in his office from New York named Paul Pfingst. Paul argued during the second trial that Greg had a predatory nature that involves stopping young women and ordering them down to a secluded Mercy off-road ramp near where Kara was killed. So remember, after that TV interview aired, that's when police officers started getting all these, you know, tips and women coming forward and saying, that same police officer pulled me over in that exact same off-ramp where Kara was killed. So Paul suggested that Craig and Kara had some sort of altercation. Fearing that Kara would report him, Craig strangled her, then tossed her body off the bridge. Craig didn't testify in his second trial either, but this jury did not deadlock. They found Greg Payer guilty of first-degree murder, making Greg the first conviction of murder by an on-duty CHP officer.
Wow.
Greg has never admitted to killing Kara Knott, and he was sentenced to 25 years to life.
I'm surprised, like, how the first one was really a deadlock, you know, because it seems like all the evidence that you're talking
they
about...
They were saying that the scratches couldn't be, like, admissible in court.
But there's blood on him. There's blood.
Yeah, I don't know. Like I said, they didn't really go into a lot of detail about mm-hmm. the first trial other than it was deadlocked. But it wasn't until the second one when Paul came in and was like, hey, listen, this is predatory nature. You have all these other women calling and saying that they got pulled over by the same cop, the same area. Like, this is his pattern. So in 2004, Greg was asked to contribute a sample of his DNA to a San Diego County program that was designed to use DNA samples to possibly exonerate wrongfully imprisoned persons, which, you know, such testing was not available at the time of his trial and conviction.
86, 87, there's no way. Right.
But get this. Greg refused. He refused to give a sample. And when he was asked at a 2004 parole hearing why he would not provide such sample, because remember, he's never admitted guilt.
He's set in a story.
Right. So when he was asked about it during his parole hearing, he wouldn't even answer that question. At that time, he was denied parole due to his lack of remorse, as well as his refusal to explain why he was innocent and yet now not allowing any testing that could prove that innocence. So they're like, dude, you're saying and you've been claiming that you're innocent this whole time. We're giving you the opportunity, like, prove it to us. And he's like, no.
You're given the opportunity and you're still not showing any remorse. I mean, come on.
Yeah. Well, in his mind, he's probably like, well, I'm not showing remorse because I never did it. But then it's like, okay, well, but why don't you want to cooperate with us? And then he's like, well, I'm not going to say.
Yeah.
You know?
Right. I mean, I don't know. I wonder if there's more.
Right. So Greg was denied parole again in 2008 and 2012. In 2012, he was given a 15-year denial, making his next parole hearing not until 2027.
Oh, dang.
Which by that time, he's going to be 77 years old.
Mm-hmm.
He's currently serving his sentence at the California Men's Colony in San Luis Obispo, which I found this kind of like interesting and funny. I don't know why funny, but I did.
Okay.
Well. Because during my research, there was an article that I read, and I can't remember the name of the article, but they said that this prison that in San Luis Obispo is supposed to be like a country club, like the country club of prisons.
What?
Yeah.
So, I mean, is that why it's called a colony?
I mean, I guess.
California Men's Colony.
Yeah. That's so weird. Now you know, Jose.
That's where I would have
to
go.
That's where you would want to go.
Can I put a request?
Right. Like that's, you know, I don't know what that means. I should have Googled it. I didn't even Google it to see what it looked like, but I've never heard of any like prison to be, oh, that's the country club, you know, like, that's so what? Weird.
What do they do during, you know, during their break?
They golf.
Golf or do polo on horses?
Right. So the location near where Kara was found was turned into a memorial garden of oak trees to honor her and other victims of violent crimes by Kara's father. Sam Knott became a nonstop advocate of crime victims following his daughter's murder. He campaigned tirelessly for local and state law enforcement agencies to install technology that would allow them to monitor the whereabouts of their officers at all times. So now everything that we have thanks to him.
Wow.
He also, that's awesome. Get this, he also pressed law enforcement to ease the standard 48-hour waiting period before issuing a missing persons bulletin to officers in the field. So remember how right away the next morning they woke up and they were like, oh my God, Kara's not home. Something is wrong. This is very unlike her. And you know, how many times have we said in this podcast, like, the parents know their kids, you know? Yeah. So it's like, if police, if they're raising a flag to authorities, they should listen, you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
But they told him that he had to wait 48 hours, just like how we've seen in so many other cases. That's why he took matters upon himself. Well, not just him, the whole family did. And that's when they started driving around and they started looking for her. And that's how he found her car.
So that had been before they even, the police even started searching, I'm assuming.
Right. Or like I said, they wouldn't even put a missing persons bulletin out.
That's crazy.
So the loss of Kara plagued Sam and the rest of Kara's family, and Sam unfortunately died within feet of where Kara's body was recovered. His heart just simply gave away, and he died of a heart attack while visiting the memorial.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
That's sad.
Yeah. So I will end this story with a fun fact.
Okay.
Kara's memorial site is haunted.
That's not surprising.
Was it? Oh my, really? You get surprised about, oh my God, he was the one that killed so-and-so, but this you're not?
Well, I kind of think like a lot of things are haunted. So that may be the reason why.
So, okay. And you know, this is right up my alley. So it was hard for me not to go into rabbit holes about this, but it was just, to me, it was shocking. I wasn't expecting to see that. And as I was doing my research, all I kept on seeing was like all this like, oh, paranormal stuff in that area. Really? So before I tell you more, let me just show you exactly on the map the location of the memorial site, okay? Because I know you're familiar with the area, but I don't think it's going to really set into focus until I show you this.
Okay.
Did it set into focus?
Not really, no.
Okay. And don't say the name, but what's right there?
Oh my God.
Exactly. So for all of our listeners that, you know, are not familiar with me and Jose, we actually work at the same company. We're not going to say the company's name.
It's across the street.
And it's literally across the street from where our office is. How many times have you driven by there? How many times have I driven by there?
Take that picture away.
Yes, the memorial service is right across the street from our office.
Really?
And I mean, I just found, like, one, I was like, oh my God, like, I go in really early. Like, what if I see something? But not only that, it was like, wow, I never knew that something this horrible, this awful happened right there. Like, I never knew that. Yeah, and I've lived here in San Diego my whole life. I never knew that. And you know exactly where that path is, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So I just want to show you that. So it really, like, it puts it into perspective for you.
Well, but that's not terrifying at all. Right?
So the next time you go in early, just keep that in mind. Because, let me tell
you. What now?
So, according to a website I found called San Diego Haunted Locations, which, you know, I love that kind of stuff. Yeah. So, according to the article, the location has only recently become a stop for local paranormal investigators. Paranormal experiences of extreme feeling of grief, hot and cold spots, as well as multiple EVPs have been recovered from this memorial.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
So, and EVPs are electronic voice phenomena.
Oh, look at you, Mr. Ghost Hunters. Yes.
I got chills. I got chills on my arm right now just thinking about this.
So yeah, so fun fact.
That doesn't sound fun at all.
Oh, does that?
No.
Well, now you can be scared when you drive into work.
Glad of working from home right now.
So fun fact, everybody. Okay.
All right. I'm pulling up the picture because I need to know where this is at so I can be away from it. Okay.
Okay.
Oh, so man.
We'll go ahead. Okay. So here's first of all, this case, like, it's something horrible. Like, I was also reading during my research that the judge, it happened to be the same judge during the first and second trial.
Okay.
And when he was giving out his sentencing, he was fighting back tears because he just couldn't believe that society had now been betrayed by a police officer. You know, somebody that wears the badge, somebody that's supposed to protect you is the one that's actually doing the killing. Like, this was the first time ever. And like I said, thanks to this case is the reason why, you know, the whole 48 hours, the whole let's keep track of where police officers are, and not just police officers, just, you know, law enforcement in general.
Yeah.
Like, right. A lot of good things came out of this tragic story. And, you know, it just, I found it like, I was already very excited to tell this story. And then when I found that on top of the memorials on it, I was like, oh my God, I have to tell Jose so I can scare him. Well, I was trying to see, because, you know, it said that supposedly there had been a lot of EVPs that were captured in her memorial.
Mm-hmm.
But I wanted to play one for you, but...
Are you kidding?
And our listeners, but I couldn't find one, so... I really wanted to scare you. Hey, you know what? It's already getting close to Halloween. Towards the end of August.
No? Oh, I can't wait for those episodes.
I love Halloween.
Oh, yeah, me too. But
so, yeah, that, like I said, that's something to keep in mind the next time you're driving into work. Like, you could see, if you pull up...
I'm looking at pictures on the website, and we'll put links on the, you know, on our website too, to this, so you can kind of see it if you find it interesting.
Yes, you guys. You guys have to go to our website and click on the link that says Hidden San Diego. And on there, look, Jose, you see, like, there's, you know, this is the freeway that we drive by.
Yeah.
And then there's this little bridge. I believe that's the bridge where she got pulled over, which is now no longer in use.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that's where she got pulled over, and then that's where she got pushed over the railing after. And again, this is all, nobody really knows exactly why things escalated the way they did. Because remember, Craig says that he's innocent. So only he knows really what happened. This is all theories from everybody else as, oh, she probably threatened him and, you know, he snapped, that was it. And that's where he was like, I need to kill her. I don't know. But it's not really known for sure why he got physical and violent with her. Because that wasn't the case for the other women that he had harassed.
Well, also that we know of.
I mean, right, That's true.
You know, you'd think that you'd hear, but I mean, there's missing people, right? That isn't out there in the media as much as you'd hope. So you really don't know. And this was back in 1986.
Mm-hmm. I was 1 year old. Fun fact.
Wasn't even born. Obviously, we know where this area is.
Mm-hmm.
It's really saddening.
If you want to look at pictures and want more information on the cases we cover, you can head over to truecrimeweeklypodcast.com. You can also follow us on Instagram at podcasttruecrimeweekly. Don't forget to also support the show by going to truecrimeweeklypodcast.com/support-the-show. And I would truly love it and appreciate it if you leave a 5-star review and subscribe onto Apple Podcast. The only way that people find out about us is through subscribers and reviews. Thanks for listening.